I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Messiah here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 93 on the road to 100, and it's been a while. But on tonight's episode, or today, or this morning, whenever you're listening to it, we will be reviewing the final two nights and the finals of New Japan Pro Wrestling's 28th G1 Climax. Or, as I put it at the beginning of this tournament, the best damn wrestling currently going on in the world, and there's nothing that WWE can do about it. But the G1 has concluded. We have a winner in Hiroshi Tanahashi. That shouldn't be a spoiler because everybody should have seen it already. This was also very much a big deal for me because for those who follow my YouTube channel, I did something very unique and new to where I did G1 updates for the most part. Not every day, but after every two nights, as I called it, nights, maybe a better way to say rounds, because other companies, and I guess when New Japan Pro Wrestling is doing the same nights. So like night one was the A block, night two was the B block, night three was the and so on. But I call the nights, or like the click the browns for each block nights on my end. So sorry for any confusion with that. But basically, I was covering each round, doing an update for each, for basically the nine rounds, or should I say the eight rounds that came out, with us doing the ninth round tonight for both A and B block, or as I would call it, the ninth night for both A and B block. And we're, of course, going to go for this. So we'll cover those two final rounds. We'll cover anything uniquely that happened during those nights that may be worth bringing mentioning. And we'll talk about, for the most part, a couple matches during the finals, because there were some important story elements that happened during the finals. We'll go down the list, and this is not going to be maybe the most insightful review in a way. And I say that in the sense, like, some matches I'll have some very quick things to say, and some I'll have more. I just don't want this turning into a two-hour podcast, because, like, if I was going to go into detail of each match, that would obviously happen. But, of course, before we get into that, I do want to give my views as on WWE, because we have NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4 happening this Saturday, and of course, WWE SummerSlam happening this Sunday. Did I say Brooklyn was Sunday? I meant Saturday, with SummerSlam being Sunday. SummerSlam Sunday. SummerSlam Sunday. SummerSlam Sunday. See, there's a tongue twister for you to try to say. SummerSlam Sunday. SummerSlam Sunday. SummerSlam, but I can't do it. There's a tongue twister for the day, folks. So, but no, going into it, I'm overall excited. And, gee, what a shock. Tommy, the WWE fan, is excited for WWE. But, you know, I think that they're putting on really good stuff. I mean, first off, talking about NXT Brooklyn 4, you know, if you've heard me on, for instance, I just did the mid-year review over at the WrestleCast with Matty J and TWK, and I've said it on there, and I've said it numerous occasions. You know, first, I went to NXT TakeOver Philadelphia, and then ultimately watched it and said, possibly best TakeOver they've ever done. Nothing can top this. Then NXT New Orleans said, hold my beer. And they went. And they were absolutely amazing. I'm like, oh, God. NXT TakeOver. New Orleans is the best. There's no way they're going to be to top this. NXT Chicago, hold both my beers. And they topped it. And, you know, and after that I said, okay, after NXT TakeOver Chicago, what the hell is NXT Brooklyn gonna do? Oh, only had possibly one of the best cards ever. I mean, I'm almost afraid that there is no way for them to live up to expectations with how, like, I'm expecting at least 3 5-star matches. At least. And I'm not expecting a match to be under 5 stars and generally rated by anybody. Especially sexual predator Dave Meltzer. I'm not going to get into that story. It just makes me giggle to see people come down on sort of the hypocrisy that is Dave Meltzer. And yeah, I guess I'll say it. I have beef with Dave Meltzer. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. But anyways, that's a whole other story for a different day. But no, I am expecting so much out of NXT Brooklyn. I mean, just going over the card. Mustache Mountain versus the Undisputed Era. Going to be amazing. In sort of the only non-title match, EC3 versus Velveteen Dream. Going to be amazing. Just the character work between those two and the charisma they have. It's going to be amazing to see how they work out. Ricochet versus Adam Cole for the North American title. Going to be amazing. Like, this would be a main event on any indie card. Kairi Sane versus Shayna Baszler. You know, both have improved so much since that very first match that they had in the finals of the Mae Young Classic. The rematch. Of course, they've also had another match with Shayna Baszler once. This is also a rubber match. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait to see what they do. This is the one I am worried about because, again, it's a women's championship match in NXT Brooklyn, and everyone is always going to be held up to the standard of Bayley versus Sasha Banks. And so, I am afraid of people being maybe possibly underwhelmed by it, because it's going to be very different from that match. Like, even Asuka versus Bayley couldn't quite match what they were doing. It's going to be interesting to see with that. And I'm trying to think, what was last year's? I can't remember. I want to say it included Asuka. It was, I'm trying to think of it, and I can't. I can't. Help me out, people. It's escaping me. But that's the only one I'm kind of worried about, not living up to expectations, just because, again, it's going to be compared to one of the greatest women's matches of all time in Sasha Banks versus Bayley, being at NXT Brooklyn. But, and then, of course, last man standing for the NXT title, Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano. And if you heard my thoughts on the WrestleCast, you know, I took their match at NXT Chicago as match of the year, and Matty J took their match at New Orleans as match of the year. That's how good this feud has been. Match of the year candidates and match of the year winners. This is going to be no different. Somebody is going to die on Saturday. Like, that's what it feels like. So, tremendously excited for NXT Brooklyn 4. And then you have NXT SummerSlam. And I know there are some matches people aren't excited about. But in general, even like matches on the pre-show, I'm excited for. The Cruiserweight title match, which I hope is the final match of the pre-show. Because it's a great way to get people, you know, up and get their energy up for the start of the show. I'm really excited to watch what's going to be a great wrestling match between Drew Gulak and Cedric Alexander. I'm excited to see Rusev and Lana versus Zelina Vega and Aldrin Cien Almas. That's going to be good. If the Revival win, I'll very much enjoy their match between the B team for the titles. But then going to the main show, I mean, I think the ones that I'm not looking forward to, and I can only have to believe that I see them as being short matches, but unless the Demon comes out, Baron Corbin versus Finn Balor, just because we've seen it before, but hopefully this will end the feud. Elias versus Bobby Lashley has had no energy in it. Really, whatsoever. But everything else, for the most part, I'm excited for. I mean, the SmackDown tag titles, it's the New Day versus the Bludgeon Brothers, and we know what the New Day has done on the SummerSlam stage. It's really amazing. And, again, that tag match they had with the Bar was amazing. I mean, I expected the Bar to win, because, again, I don't think the Bludgeon Brothers have faced the Bar. But again, you know, we'll see what happens from here. So that's going to be good. Trying to look down the card. The Intercontinental title match, Rollins versus Ziggler, with each person having a person, you know, Ambrose in Rollins' corner and McIntyre in Ziggler's corner, is going to be amazing. It's so hot. Jeff Hardy versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Just the entrances alone should be amazing. And I guarantee it's going to be a good match that people are going to enjoy. Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. A story 10 years in the making. Or should I say 8 years in the making. It's going to be amazing. You know, this is... everybody talks about this being... In storyline, Miz talks about this being the marquee match that Daniel Bryan has needed. I see this as the marquee match that The Miz has deserved for such a long time. It's going to be amazing. The women's title matches, you know, you're going to have the triple threat between Charlotte, Becky, and Carmella. That, I think, is going to be really good. Honestly, I really enjoyed Ronda Rousey, obviously she's green, and obviously she's learning, but she has great charisma, and, you know, again, it's just worked out really good. I'm anxious to see her match between Alexa Bliss and see how that turns out. AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe, which I wish would go on last. I know it's not, but again, a match that 10 years ago was a match of the year candidate in TNA, and they're only gotten better with age. It's going to be amazing. It really is. The one match I think everybody's worried about is obviously Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. I think particularly that final storyline, I mean, the past 3 weeks with, Lesnar hurting Heyman, Heyman's interview, Heyman talking with Roman Reigns, thinking that he's going to try to pair with him, and ultimately sabotaging him with pepper spray, and Lesnar coming out and just, like, completely destroying Reigns when he's blinded. I actually enjoyed that storyline. I think there's going to be no doubt about how much both men are going to be booed in Brooklyn. But, of course, it also worries about him because you don't know what WWE feels about with Brock Lesnar. I think they've kept the belt on him far too long. And again, I don't think they're getting the benefits that they think they're getting just from his name brand alone. Or at the very least, if they're getting it, it's not... Let me see how to put this. It's not overtaking the loss that is happening from fans' anger and fans' disappointment. There are fans that have straight up left the WWE Network and are not coming back until the belts off Lesnar. And again, I think that's more than the fans maybe they gained on the network just from Lesnar's brand name because they like UFC. I think it's time to move on. Again, they keep holding off the trigger, and I pray to God that they don't. Again, everybody knows, put the title on Reigns, or have Braun Strowman cash in. Again, that's another match I forgot, which, again, if it goes on first, that's going to tell you that Strowman may cash in later. But Braun Strowman versus Kevin Owens, that should be enjoyable as well. I expect, by the way, to see Jinder Mahal get involved in that match as well. Though, that actually makes me think that may be the solution to WWE's problems. Have Kevin Owens actually win it, and then have him actually cash in on either Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar a la Seth Rollins. And you want to talk about a pop. You have Kevin Owens win the Money in the Bank briefcase from Braun Strowman and then cash it in that night and become champion. Holy hell. The roof will pop off the Barclays Center. So there are good possibilities and good storylines for them to work. And by the way, Roman Reigns, Kevin Owens. Loved it the first time. Love it again. So, yeah. I mean, let's see where it goes. So those are my views on SummerSlam and NXT Brooklyn 4. With that, let's get into our view of the G1 finals, which took place in the Nippon Budokan, the final three nights. This is mostly due to the fact that they're the normal place they have it, which is the Sumo Hall in, I believe, the Rigoku Kokugikan, which is Tokyo? Yeah, it's in Tokyo, in Sumida, Tokyo, Japan. Was under renovation. It's where they usually have the G1 finals. But this time they had it at the Nippon Budokan, which they haven't had something in there, I believe, since 2003. Final three nights, so let's get into the finals of the New Japan Pro Wrestling G1 Climax. Go ahead! We'll be right back. And welcome back, and let's get right into it. For both the 10th and the 11th, which were the final nights for both A and B block, there really isn't much to say about the undercard matches, other than the really one thing of note that comes to my mind was the Whoop Whoop Party. This was a match, the match was Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks versus Kota Ibushi, Marty Scurll, and Chase Owens. This, of course, you know, because the undercard matches usually featured the two competitors who'd be facing each other either the next night or whatever, though not in the case necessarily for B block, for A block, but A block contestants, as they would probably be facing maybe somebody they have a beef with, but that's besides the point. But, like, that's how it usually went throughout the G1. And in this case, on the 10th, it was B-Block competitors facing off in tag matches, and of course, with their partners of their choosing. In this case, it was a six-man tag, and because, of course, Omega and Ibushi, Golden Lovers, a.k.a. all part of the Golden Elite, all Golden Elite members. So there are very two key things that happened during this match. One, nobody hit each other. Like, there were arm drags and little things like that, but it was a lot of counter-wrestling and ultimately leading to a standoff. Like, it was, like, I think Matt Jackson and Chase Owens, and they had a standoff. Marty Scurll and Nick Jackson, they had a standoff. Omega and Ibushi had a standoff, but they could never strike each other. And it got to a point where Tiger Tori, who's the referee, just, like, he's trying to get him, like, come on, get to it. And he's moving his arms in a flappy motion, not knowing what he's doing. And, of course, they go, this? Do this? And then, of course, Marty Scurll does it. Nick Jackson does it. And soon everybody starts doing the Marty Scurll flapping of the wings. And they're going, whoop, whoop, whoop. And the funniest thing is Kota Ibushi, who's, like, just, like, mind-blown. And he's, like, subtly doing it, like, I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to be doing. What are we doing? It was absolutely hilarious. And that's really one of the things that's really great about the G1, is they did have their fair share of comedy. A lot of that coming from Tori Gano, one of the MVPs of this tournament. But again, we're going to get to MVPs because, you know, besides moments and matches of the tournament, we're going to talk about our MVPs. So moving on to the first match of A Block, we had Michael Elgin versus Togi Makabe. And this was, again, as it has been for most of the tournament with Elgin or Makabe when they are facing another power guy, it's power versus power. But here it was more of that brawler style of Makabe versus the straight-up power and technique of Elgin. And it was a good back-and-forth battle with the surprise of Makabe winning. And again, a lot of these undercard matches here were more about pride, as most of the people were eliminated from contention, and particularly in A-Block. I mean, both blocks, definitely, but particularly in A-Block. I'm looking at the wrong one. I was looking at the wrong list. I went to look at the list and, like, yeah, most people were eliminated from contention. And so, for the most part, it was that the race to make sure that you got at least 6 points. Because no one wanted to be at 4 points, which pretty much did actually happen. So that was a good match. Makabe, for sort of the first surprise of the night with the win with the King Kong knee drop. Then you had Yoshihashi versus Hangman Page. Again, a very good contest, with a lot of the storyline being Yoshihashi trying to prove himself, get to 6 points, to basically at least prove that he was worth being in the tournament, versus Hangman Page, who had come off some pretty impressive wins, including one over Suzuki, which was a major upset that no one saw coming. And they had a good match, and sort of the surprise of Yoshihashi picking up the win with, you know, Karma over Paige. No, but I don't think anybody expected that. So that was a good match. Then you had Minoru Suzuki versus Bad Luck Fale, and pretty much went like every other Bad Luck Fale match that had been in the tournament, where they started hot, in this case with brawling, but just when it seems like Fale is going to lose, in comes the Tongans, disqualification, Suzuki wins, but Bad Luck Fale leaves this tournament, never have been pinned or submitted. It's all part of the larger storyline of the firing squad of Tama Tonga and Tangaloa and Bad Luck Fale. And we'll see them more importance in that final night. Then you have Jay White versus Evil. Now going into the final night for A Block, Jay White needed to win and for Tanahashi to lose to win the block. But first, of course, he had to win. And so that was the ongoing storyline between him and Evil. And you had both were rule breakers. Evil had more of the power game against Jay White's finesse. And that played very well through the match. And I very much loved the ending of the match to where referee gets shoved out of the way. You know, after a low blow doesn't work for White, he goes to hit him with a chair, but duck and counter into everything is evil for Evil, and the referee then pops in and gets the 1-2-3. It was satisfying to see the villain get his comeuppance in that way, even though it sort of took tension away a little bit because it took one competitor, but again, still, in this case, it was as it was for both nights, it came down to the final match, and whoever would win that match got in. Which leaves us to Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Kazuchika Okada. One of the greatest feuds in New Japan Pro Wrestling history. And they had a just slam dinger of a match that went to a draw. And it was incredible. And the thing I like about it is, it was very clearly, like, even though it was a draw, Tanahashi out-wrestled Okada throughout the entire match, to the point to where Okada was out, and even though he kicked out of the first high-fly flow with seconds left, as those final seconds were ticking after the kickout, Tanahashi was still going back up to the top to hit another high-fly flow, and if he had like another minute, or 30 seconds even, could have won that match. Like, he had that much energy, Okada was wasted. And so, again, Tanahashi, throughout, as he's been through this entire tournament, has just, like, brought the best out of people. And that draw, which, by the way, gave him the record for most points ever by anybody in the G1 Climax with 15. No one's ever gotten 15 points before, sent him to the finals. And an absolutely outstanding match. If you want to see how a good draw should be, this is a great example, along with Okada versus Omega, too. Moving on to B Block again. They did a great job of sort of finishing off storylines that happened throughout the tournament. Tama Tonga versus Tori Yano. Good, fun match. Yano, just like I said, an MVP of the tournament. We'll talk about him more a little bit later. Outstanding. And again, though, it went the same way. Just when it looked like Toriyano was starting to come back, Tama Tonga gets himself disqualified. It ultimately leads, though, to them being kicked out of the building so they won't affect later matches, particularly Omega versus Ibushi. Then I believe, yeah, you had Hiroki Goto versus Juice Robinson. A very good match, that traditional strong style of Goto versus very flamboyant style Robinson, worked very well against each other. Very fun match. And again, the storyline of Juice Robinson trying to overcome demons and defeating Goto and doing just that to end his tournament, I believe, yes, with 6 points, yes. Then you had Ishii versus Sonata. Absolutely an outstanding match. The toughness and power of Ishii versus just speed and finesse of Sonata. Great back and forth battle, and Ishii winning with Spinning Brain Buster. Absolutely outstanding. Ishii, another MVP we'll be talking about a little bit later. Outstanding match. Then you had Naito versus Zack Sabre Jr. And I guess looking at it now, if you wanted Ibushi to win, I mean, and I guess that's the deal I have with it, is that like, it pretty much told me that Ibushi was going to win, because I didn't think Kenny Omega was going to win. I think it brings up sort of a mistake they made with B-Block. I think they should have had Kota Ibushi maybe win one more so he would have been tied, and that way you could have had Naito win, and that would have put the tension on the situation a lot more. But I don't think anybody expected Naito to lose to Zack Sabre Jr., but for the, if you looked at it from a story standpoint, if you wanted Ibushi to win, he had to. But yeah, I was not expecting Zack Sabre Jr. to defeat Tetsuya Naito with the Zack driver that he has received from Taka Michinoku. But it was a really, really good match. Again, Naito, like Tanahashi in A-Block, has had this great job of like, bringing the best out of wrestlers through all his matches because of his charisma and just his very smooth style. And again, just one of the better matches Zack Sabre Jr. has had this entire tournament. And again, like out of nowhere win, just an upset that left people crying. You know, Kim Kelly and Rocky Romero, who by the way had been outstanding throughout this entire tournament with their play-by-play. You know, talked about like for the rest of the night, there was a female fan of Naito who had been who was literally sobbing the rest of the night. Like that's how much impact Naito had. That left us to Omega versus Ibushi. This was a great match, but it was also very obvious that they didn't show us everything they would do against each other. Like, this was a very compact match within a 30-minute frame that went 23 minutes, 13 seconds. And the ending with the Tiger Driver off the top rope, and that leading to the Kamigori on Omega, leading to the win. Just a small... And there's, it's almost a story because throughout the match, it almost seemed like if Omega really didn't want to... wasn't there, really didn't want to do this, but had to do this. And, you know, with Omega having, I believe, at least two title defenses to do before... the Tokyo Dome and Wrestle Kingdom, I think one of them has to be against Ibushi. One has to be. That's a match I think everybody wants to see without the 30-minute time limit, with a 60-minute limit, and wants to see what they'll do. I guarantee you it will surpass anything Okada and Omega ever did. But yeah, it was a really good match, and Ibushi won. And, you know, I mean, mind you, I'm going to boast here. I called Tanahashi winning A-Block. I don't think a lot of people called that. But I also called either Naito or Ibushi winning B-Block. Those are my two picks. And so, when it came down to it, I actually picked Ibushi versus Tanahashi. And so, in a little bit of boasting, I am glad I was right. I am thin-skinned in that way. I really am. But just to give you the final points totals for that night, for A-Block, Bad Luck Fale, Hangman Page, Toga Makabe, Michael Elgin, and Yoshihashi all ended with 6. Minoru Suzuki and Evil ended with 10. Jay White ended with 12. Kazuchika Okada ended with 13 because of the draw. And Hiroshi Tanahashi ended with 15. He had 7 wins, 1 loss, and 1 draw. Over in B-Block, Tamatanga, Toriano, Hiroki Goto, Juice Robinson all ended with 6 points. Sonata with 8 points, Tomohiro Ishii with 10 points, and Tetsuya Naito, Zack Sabre Jr., Kenny Omega, and Kota Ibushi ended all with 12 points, but Ibushi held literally the tiebreaker over every wrestler tied with him. He had beaten Omega, beaten Zack Sabre Jr., and beaten Naito. Omega held a tiebreaker over both Zack Sabre Jr. and Tetsuya Naito. With Naito being on the bottom end because he had lost to both Ibushi, Omega, and Zack Sabre Jr. That's why he was in fourth. Zack Sabre Jr. had lost the tiebreaker to only two of the other three wrestlers, with Omega only having the tiebreaker loss to Ibushi, which is why Kota Ibushi went on. Moving on to the G1 finals per se, well, we'll go down the card properly, and I'll comment on it. The first match would be the Great Bash Heels of Toge Makabe and Tomaki Honma. By the way, they teamed with Tanahashi versus Chaos in the undercard for the night before, where they faced, I believe it was Okada, and I can't remember who else they faced. But yeah, it's great seeing Honma being able to come back from that devastating injury. They would face Ayato Yoshida, who's a up-and-coming wrestler from the Kaientai Dojo, Shota Umino and Yuji Nagata. Makabe would win with a King Kong knee drop on Yoshida. And again, this is your standard opener match. More of getting the young lion some experience, and it is what it is. Then you had a very short match, Tora Hanre versus Bad Luck Fale. Hanre starts hot, but then he gets cocky. Bad Luck Fale catches him and puts him out of his misery. Then you had Suzuki-Gun. You had Taichi and Takashi Iizuka versus Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi. Taichi would defeat Yoshihashi with a 10-year-old powerbomb. And again, storyline here of Tenshi was trying to get into the G1. They kept Yoshihashi in, trying to make a case that he should have been put in over Yoshihashi. He's also trying to challenge Goto for that Never Open Weight title. And so all those storylines are in play, and so it could lead to Taichi getting a Never Open Weight title match, along with the others who had beaten Goto in the G1, which is another thing about the G1, which is that people who defeat champions there usually get title shots, as we'll talk about a little bit later. Then you had Cody Rhodes and Hangman Page versus David Finlay and Juice Robinson. I was looking because on here it has it listed as the Kudo Driver. I know it as the Gringo Killer from not Hernandez, but oh, why am I blanking on his name? People will help me. Hernandez's partner. And I'm completely blanking on it. Yeah. Surprising when, because of the move, which is can be a very dangerous move, but yeah. Cody Rhodes hitting the Kudo Driver on Juice Robinson picks up the win in what was a very fun match. And then, but more importantly, I think I remember afterwards, I think we know what one of the matches is going to be for that return to Long Beach in the fall, as Rhodes cuts a promo, basically staking his claim for Juice Robinson's IWGP United States title. And it's really memorable because he basically calls Robinson a bad impression of Kairi Sane. Which, that also to me shows you, like, this is why WWE is the bigger and the better company, because when you have other wrestling companies, especially something like New Japan, constantly, you know, comparing wrestlers to wrestlers in the WWE, yeah, that tells you WWE is the bigger company, at least in the way I see it. Then you had the Firing Squad, Taji, Ishimori, Tamatanga, and Tagaloa versus the Bullet Club of Marty Scurll and the Young Bucks. and each did promos before, and basically the Bullet, the firing squad tries to get the Bullet Club to put their never open weight six man titles on the line, and they do. And again, very good back and forth match, but only gave us a taste of what was possible. And the firing squad would win as Tonga would hit a gun stun on Marty Skrull when he didn't know he was legal to win it. And then, of course, being great heels, they just threw the titles down at the stunned New Japan Pro Wrestling new president, Harold Midgey. So that was important for that reason. Los Ingobernables, the next match, by the way, would be Los Ingobernables de Japón. Bushi, Evil, Sonata, and Tetsuya Naito versus Suzuki Gun, which would be Minoru Suzuki, Zack Sabre Jr., El Desperado, and Yoshibu Kanemaru. I want to say Kanemaru, but it's Kanemaru, excuse me. This would end with submission of Skull End on Kanemaru by Sonata. Again, your typical Los Ingobernables De Japón versus Suzuki Gun 8-man tag match. I've seen it before. They really didn't do anything new. It gave Naito a little bit of revenge over Zack Sabre Jr. for his loss, but again, it's okay, but it's nothing special. Something that was special, though, would be the next match. As a Chaos team of Switchblade Jay White, Tomohiro Ishii, and Toru Yano would face the Bullet Club team of Chase Owens, Kenny Omega, and Yujiro Takahashi, who would, of course, come out with Petra, a.k.a. the finest woman on God's green effing earth. Oh, my beating heart, I have been waiting the entire tournament to see her, and oh, good God. They should erect statues in her honor and declare holidays in her name. Like, that's the type of beauty she has. There's really two things to bring. Because it was a fun six-man tag match. But part of that fun came from what was obviously moment of the match. So, Bullet Club members get Yano and Ishii and Jay White and I can't remember what it's called, but it's like basically where they're all like they form a circle because it's these leg locks that they have all in. And so then Takahashi calls Petra over and she starts dancing in the middle of the circle. And oh dear God. And it gets funny because everybody starts forgetting. And there's this great shot because you see Yano, Owens, and White. And they're just like, They've forgotten to, like, sell the pain. They're just like, oh, this is awesome. But, of course, leave it to Old Man Omega to be the party pooper. You know, like, this should be happy. This is wrestling. And, like, stops it and, like, shoos Petra out of the ring. And it's like, and in that moment, Kenny Omega became an absolute heel. Damn that Old Man Omega. But yeah, so, like I said, fun match, obviously moment of the match, very fun. And then, Ishii would pick up the win with vertical drop, brainbuster on Owens. Into which afterwards, Ishii issued the challenge to Omega for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, which everybody wants to see, especially after a match we're going to be talking about a little bit later that happened earlier in the tournament between Omega and Ishii. Where Ishii handed Omega his first loss of the tournament. Our next match would be Kushida, Pro Wrestling Son Goku, and Nebu, and Rey Mysterio Jr., what may be his final New Japan appearance, at least before he signed for WWE, versus the Chaos team of Kazuchika Okada, Sho, and Yo. First off, before I start anything, do we know who pro wrestler Sengoku Inoue's trainer is? Do we know if it's Ryusuke Taniguchi? Because If not, he is completely ripping off so many maneuvers from Yusuke Taniguchi. And that's gimmick infringement. And gimmick infringement is wrong. That aside, wink, wink, if you've not seen it, watch the finals and you'll get the joke. But yeah, this is a great team. Kushida looked awesome. Rey Mysterio looked amazing. Amazing gear. And it was a fun match. Obviously, the most amazing stuff, though, was they had Rey Mysterio and Kazuchika Okada versus each other for a short bit. And they kept teasing more of it. And it's like, I don't know if Rey Mysterio has one more appearance with New Japan, but if he does, they need to do Kazuchika Okada versus Rey Mysterio. They need to. They need to immensely do that. Like, oh my god. It was amazing. And of course, Rey Mysterio would pick up the win. He would hit the 619 on Yo, and then, of course, the springboard splash into the pinfall for the victory. That was a fun match. That would leave us to Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Kota Ibushi. Absolutely an outstanding finals match. First off, the seconds in each of their corners. Ibushi had Kenny Omega, but surprise came from Tanahashi, as in his corner was the wrestler Katsuyori Shibata. And it was amazing. Oh my god. And then you had the actual match. And just, oh, great chemistry between both Ibushi and Tanahashi. Back and forth they went. So much drama in the match, because a lot of this was sort of a sort of sensei versus student type of match. You know, with Tanahashi trying to push Ibushi to beat him. But at the same time, he's also trying to win. And so a great story there. They bring up that, you know, Tanahashi had been critical of Ibushi, saying, like, when is he going to grow up? When is he going to get serious? Because he can be the next big star. And in a way, is already possibly the next big star. But a great back and forth contest. A lot of this was, can Ibushi hit the Kamigori on Tanahashi? Because, like, in the match they had a year ago in the G1, where Ibushi won, he was able to hit that. The match they would have later in the year for the IWGP Intercontinental title, Tanahashi was able to avoid it, and Ibushi couldn't avoid the high fly flow. So it became about that. And it was once again where Tanahashi was able to use his veteran ability to counter the Kamigori and ultimately be able to hit the high fly flow. It was just a great contest. You know, the jump up moonsault by Ibushi to the outside, that was great. The counter of the Kamigori into Sling Blade, that was great. And then just, like, the build up to that finish was absolutely amazing. And seeing Tanahashi win his third G1 climax, and by the way, not break the flag, was amazing. Even more amazing, he wins, and Shibata has Tanahashi up on his shoulders. It was amazing. Really, if there's one match you watch during this whole finals, that's the one to watch. For obvious reasons. So you didn't need to be told that, but if it was just about wrestling, like, it was the best wrestling match of the night. So that brings us to our final thoughts. We're going to start with, and this is going to cover the whole G1 as well. So, top three moments of the entire tournament. So, number three, the Petra Bullet Club dance circle. Have to give it to that. It has to be there. Number two, Kota Ibushi, the first moonsault that Kota Ibushi did off the upper deck against Ishii, because it was higher and more amazing. That was absolutely amazing. And my, because there are many good, fun moments here. But the upset of Ishii versus Omega, an absolutely immense moment that no one saw coming and was absolutely tremendous. You're going to hear me talking a lot about this match, by the way, in just a little bit. In fact, just now, because let's go into top three matches. Number three for me, Toriano versus Kota Ibushi. Absolutely fun, hilarious, wonderful match. The only reason I don't have it actually tied, or should I say, the only reason I don't have Yano versus Omega tied with this is because of the way Yano won in Omega's match, where, again, you had the story of the Firing Club getting involved, but very close fourth is Yano versus Omega. That match, oh my god. Go check out the YouTube video I did of the update. I believe it was night seven, where I just gushed and gushed and gushed about this match. Watch it from, the tying Omega's hands to Young Lion and putting Young Lion over the railing, the body slam on the cushioned corner or pads that had been taken out and put in the middle of the ring that didn't hurt Omega whatsoever. Chase Owens acting as a pad. It was amazing. The almost quick pin at the very beginning of the match. So much to talk about. But like because of that finish, where it was a more surprising finish with Yano actually being able to roll up and pin Ibushi, who he had taped his hands together, it was great. So that's number three. Number two, Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Kota Ibushi in the finals. Absolutely outstanding match. But number one, Tomohiro Ishii versus Kenny Omega. I mean, it's both of those are match of the year candidates, but like this shocking upset of it. And just to see, by the way, Ishii, who I love, get that recognition. Just it was an absolutely amazing match. Both wrestlers were bleeding. It was just a slugfest. You have to watch it. Like, the constant kickouts by Ishii is what really puts it over the top. And that leaves us to the MVPs of the night, of the tournament. Number three, Toriano. Every match he was in was absolutely entertaining and hilarious and funny and wonderful. And like, there are some matches where they're entertaining, but like, you toward these sort of slow sections, you may bring out your phone and look at Twitter real quick. You're not looking at your Twitter account when Yano is on there. Like, just his matches are fun and full of energy, and like, he really shone through the entire tournament. Number two, Hiroshi Tanahashi, the winner. Like, just, again, that great chemistry that he had in all of his matches, the great charisma that just brought out the best in wrestlers, made you want to watch, and just the different ways he would win throughout the entire tournament, from unique pins, to submissions, to even the draw. Outstanding. But like I said, Tomohiro Ishii, MVP of the entire tournament, number one MVP, I should say. Absolutely outstanding throughout the entire tournament. Every match was absolutely outstanding that he had. Like I said, the match between Kota Ibushi. Oh my god! That slugfest. Those strikes. Amazing. The match he had with Naito was amazing. The slugfest with Kota. Amazing. The hilarious match he had with his partner, Gano, to where Gano multiple times almost upset him by actually wrestling. Amazing. And like I said, the match he had with Kenny Omega, which is right now my match of the year. Like, if it had happened before August 1st, I would have had it match of the year on the mid-year review of WrestleCast. But right now, it is my match of the year at the end of the year, barring Ricochet and Adam Cole or Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa 3. And what they do, or what any other match might happen throughout the year. But right now, it's my match of the year. That's how good that match is. And you had matches absolutely outstanding throughout the entire tournament from Tomohiro Ishii. So, final reviews. I mean, the G1 final itself is okay. There are a couple matches worth watching. But the real kicker, it's all really a build-up to that final match between Tanahashi and Kota Ibushi. So I give the actual 28th G1 Climax finals itself a 3 out of 5 stars. Very solid. That final match is really the one match worth watching. But there's a lot of fun. No, actually, let me correct that. It's 4 out of 5 stars. And that match really deserves it to be pushed up just to 4. And there's some good matches. It's just that, you know, particularly the first 3 can be skipped through. The tag match with Cody and Paige versus Robinson and Finlay, it's really that promo that Rhodes cuts after, and it's worth watching. Firing Squad versus Bullet Club, okay. Again, more story build. I was thinking of an obvious day how Pwn versus Suzuki Gun can be skipped. I've said already all of the reasons you should watch Chaos versus Bullet Club 6-man tag match. And that's Petra. Or Pietra, excuse me. I hope I'm saying the name right. I'm probably butchering that. And then, of course, the final. So, 4 out of 5 for me. And then the entire G1 Climax itself gets a 5 out of 5. The entire tournament was absolutely outstanding. I really, outside of the Bad Luck Fale matches and the Tama Tonga matches, because again, they're very repetitive. It's the same thing happening over and over again with disqualifications and interference. Outside of that, there really isn't a match I can't sit there and say you can skip. Every match is pretty much a must watch. The entire G1 Climax was absolutely outstanding. They had twists and turns and swerves and shocking upsets, and it ended with an absolutely tremendous match. 5 out of 5 for the entire 28th G1 Climax. So, yeah, check it out when you can. It's going to be interesting going forward, and I can't wait to see it. So, that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, you can leave comments at the site at www.an.132productions.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Absolution Network. Also, check out our YouTube page, the Absolution Network, by searching Absolution Network on YouTube. Like us, subscribe, and of course, always leave comments on our videos. And of course, by the way, go over to RVT Entertainment, their YouTube page, and check out the latest episode of the WrestleCast, which features the mid-year review with me, Maddie J., TWK, I'm of course the guest on their show. We had a very fun time, and I don't know if you'll hear the name Brock Lesnar a lot now. I'm just saying, whether that's on the good or bad list, you have to listen to find out. So go over to RVT Entertainment on YouTube and check out the latest episode of the WrestleCast and the mid-year review, which I guest on. And that is it for this episode. I will be back next week with a review of NXT Brooklyn 4 and NXT SummerSlam. I kind of didn't go over it, but like Extreme Rules and Backlash and the Greatest Royal Rumble ever. I tried to do stuff for it. It doesn't feel worth talking about. Especially Extreme Rules felt like a big disappointment. Not as much as Backlash, but it's a whole different story. And that's hurt WWE in their build to SummerSlam, is the sort of Backlash and Extreme Rules not being really good pay-per-views. But we'll see. So next week, I'll tell you all about my views on NXT Brooklyn 4 and SummerSlam. And until that next time, I want you to remember that I'm the most glorious Jew that ever lived, in your wrestling messiah. 'Cause I'm seeing you. Recognize. You're all that I have, and you're all that I need. Each and every.
the day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe. I said I believe. To feed one baby right down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will rip a hole in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want.